Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another segment of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight's show, I do without an introduction because this is the type of show we've never actually done before, but we're very sensitive to the subject matter, and we want to start off by saying we're not the judge or the jury in this particular situation. We're just going to allow this lady to tell her story. We have contacted all parties involved, including the funeral home, the funeral commission, everyone that possibly could have had a stake in saying something on this show, we contacted them. The funeral commission has chosen not to make a statement. They said it was pending in the outcome of the investigation, so therefore they would not speak. We've contacted the funeral home, and we left a message. We called several times, and we were not successful in reaching anyone with the funeral home. So tonight's story is about Annie Thompson. Annie Thompson died June 19th, which we call Juneteenth here in Texas. And the story turns into somewhat of a once her mother died, and what they did as a family to prepare for her homegoing services. Per Ms. Thompson, some things went terribly wrong. And as I said, tonight this is her story, and we're going to let her tell it. Our guest tonight, like I said, is LaCrecia Steele Thompson, the daughter of Annie Thompson. Also, we have Mr. Steve Novacek. Steve is the chief coroner that was so famously known for the HBO documentary called Banging in Little Rock some years ago, in which he witnessed so many young men being murdered in Little Rock, Arkansas, that there was actually a documentary done about it, and he's with us tonight. And later this evening, we're going to have Mr. Jones to join us. We're calling him Mr. Jones, not his real name, because he works in the industry in our area. He's an embalmer and funeral home director, and he's going to give us some insight as to how things are actually supposed to go. And per Ms. Thompson tonight, things did not go very well or did not go right when they were preparing to bury her mother. So at this time, I'm going to open the phone lines of LaCrecia Thompson and Steve Novacek. Good evening.
Hey, good evening.
How are you guys doing?
Good evening. We know that Steve Novacek is only going to be with us for the first hour. So, Steve, I'm going to ask you early on before we begin, you know, to explain to the audience, you did get a chance to view the autopsy photos, and you did get a chance to view the autopsy itself.
Yes, I've looked at both of them. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at it right now as we speak.
Okay. So Steve is not just talking to us based on anything that we are telling him. He's basically he's actually looking at the information himself. So with that said, we're going to begin. LaCrecia, we understand that your mother passed on June 19, 2010, in Fort Worth, Texas.
Correct.
Okay. What happened at that point? You were notified that she had passed at 9:30 p.m. on June 19, 2010.
Correct.
Okay. And what happened at that point?
I left from where I was at, made it to the hospital about 9:45 p.m., and I stayed with her till about 2 a.m.,
so
laying on top of her.
The hospital actually allowed you to stay with your mother's remains from 9:45 p.m. until 2 a.m.?
Yes, because we had other family members that were still coming in to see her, and I just laid on top of her until 2, and then at 2, the nurse stated that it was time for us to leave because they needed to take her down to the mortuary.
Okay. That said, you had that much time to be with your mother, and as you stated, you were laying on top of her. How did your mother look to you at that particular point?
Oh, my mother was beautiful. My mother and my grandmother, they're mixed with Indian. So her skin tone, she had a beautiful red skin tone that raised up from her face. She had a glow about her. She wasn't cold. The only thing that was wrong with her from when they took out the tubing or put the tubing in her mouth and took out the tubing, they did break her tooth. And so one of my cousins wrapped the towel around her head to keep her mouth from being open, you know, when rigor mortis set in. But other than that, I mean, she was a beautiful woman. She was light-skinned, very light-skinned, beautiful skin, beautiful hair, And that's how I saw her last, with the glow.
Okay,
she had
so
a glow
pictures,
for her.
So the pictures that we have on the front page that are showing your mother living, that is how you saw your mother the night that you were in the hospital with her from 9:45 until 2 a.m.?
Correct.
Okay. So on June 20th of 2010, you did what? You contacted who?
That morning, I had contacted the funeral home to see if her body had been picked up, and they, you know, told me yes.
Okay. And when we say the funeral home, you all, she can't state what funeral home, but the records show, and these are records that we have looked at and verified, that Angel Hill Funeral Director is the funeral home that handled her mother's body. So I'm just going on record to say it. We looked at records to verify that. So I can say that she has some pending legal matters with them, so she can't state it, but I can say the fact that I did see this and did verify that that is the funeral home in which we're talking about. So that said, you asked them, had they picked up your mother's body, and you were told what?
When I contacted them, it was around like 9:30 that morning. Asked them had she been picked up, and they said yes, and she was in the cooler, and they were just waiting on me to come in the next day.
Okay, and at this point, I'll stop you and ask Steve Novacek. Steve Novacek, that's say it. If a body expired or a person expired at 9:30 p.m. on Saturday, June 19th, and by Sunday, June 20th at 9:30 a.m., they were already refrigerated. Does that seem consistent with the autopsy photos that you saw in the autopsy report?
So the time of death was what time? 9:30
p.m.
9:30 p.m.
And then the body remained in the hospital room for how long?
Until 2 a.m.
Until 2 a.m.
Right,
so,
but she wasn't cold. She was still warm.
Okay, and then they at 2 a.m. they took your mother. They said they were taking her to the mortuary or to the morgue?
To the morgue, yes. And they were going to wait on whatever funeral home I had, you know, coming to pick
okay.
her up.
Okay, so was the hospital morgue refrigerated? Surely it was.
Of course, yes.
Okay. So then what time did the funeral home pick the body up?
They stated to me they picked it up around 9:30.
In the morning?
Sunday morning, yes, which would have been the 20th, June 20th.
All right. So then they took her to the mortuary, and they said they were going to put her in the cooler until the arrangements were made. Is that correct?
Right, because I had paid for an outside pathologist to come in and do an autopsy.
Okay.
And so she was supposed to go into the cooler until the autopsy was performed.
So at 9:38, the funeral home is stating to her that the body is already in the cooler.
Right, and it was in, and they picked it up at 9:30 in the morning, right? It remained in the hospital mortuary until 9:30 in the morning.
Correct.
Okay, so the funeral home picked her up, took her to the funeral home, and put her in a cooler.
That's what I was told.
Well, that's not consistent with these photographs, of course, because your mother was in fairly advanced stages of decomposition. And, you know, that would not have happened had she been in the properly refrigerated cooler. Now, there are some things that, like that increase the, that hurry up the decomposition, and that's generally heat. People that are obese have a tendency to decompose a little bit faster because the body heat, you know, remains in. But still, with this, the photographs that I've been furnished, that the numbers on the photographs are correct with the case number on the autopsy that I'm looking at. Your mother was not in a refrigerated place, in my opinion.
Okay.
You know, because they did the autopsy, it says on the 23rd at 7 p.m. So ostensibly, or I would think that they would have had the body transferred to them from the funeral home.
The autopsy, I'll interject right there. The autopsy was actually done at the funeral home, so the body was never removed from the point that it got from the hospital to the funeral
home. Okay. So the forensic, this American forensics, the pathologist went to the funeral home and did the autopsy.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Okay, so it's 9:30 a.m. on Sunday, the day following her death, and we're being told
that's the 20th, right?
That's the 20th. And
right.
She's being told that the body was being refrigerated. Is that not correct, Lucretia?
That's correct.
Okay. So then on the 21st, which was the Monday following your mother's death, you went actually to Angel Hill Funeral Directors to take the insurance paperwork, about, you know, concerning your mother's death and who was beneficiary and that type of thing to the funeral home, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So who did you speak with when you went to Angel Hill Funeral Directors on Monday the 21st, 2010?
Did you see your mother when you went on the 21st?
No.
Okay.
So she did not get there. The last time she viewed her mother's body was in the hospital until 2 a.m. on the 19th. Is that correct?
Isn't right.
That the way, okay. So
right. And then when did you see it again? When did you see your mother again?
I never saw my mother's body again until I received the CD from American Forensics of the autopsy pictures.
So why did the funeral home say that it couldn't be an open casket?
The funeral home stated to me that it could not be an open casket because her body was in second stage of decomposition, and they wouldn't let me see her, but they didn't tell me that until Wednesday.
Let's start just a little bit and establish this timeline so that the listeners can understand exactly what happened, because there were several situations that occurred throughout this week that kind of draws an imaginary picture for us all to see. So what happened was you went to the funeral home on Monday, June 21st, 2010, Angel Hill Funeral Directors, and you spoke with who?
Linda Cooper.
Linda Cooper. Okay. Did you give them the insurance policy at that time?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Was your mother refrigerated at that point?
When I asked her, she stated to me yes. When I asked could I see her, she stated to me no.
Okay. Did the funeral home tell you at any point that pending them verifying the insurance documents, your mother would be refrigerated, or that there was some legality that had to be worked out prior to refrigeration? Did they ever give you any indicator that everything wasn't A-OK at that point?
No, they did not.
Okay.
Standard protocol. There's no protocol in the world that says you do not refrigerate a body. You refrigerate a body if the body is not going to be embalmed, and I assume they did not embalm. Did you get a bill for embalming?
No. Once Dr. Gwynn got through with the autopsy, the next day, the guy that owns the funeral home, he said that he will be kind enough to take $500 off of the embalming.
And we have on the phone line Mr. Jones, who, as we said earlier, is not his real name. We're calling him Mr. Jones because he works in the funeral home industry in our area, and it's just a conflict of interest for him to, you know, state his name and that type of thing on this program. But we understand he has over 20 years' experience in the industry. Good evening, Mr. Jones. How are you?
Hello. Good evening. I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Now, you have over 20 years of experience in the business, correct?
Yes.
And your title is what?
I'm a licensed funeral director and a licensed embalmer in the state of Texas.
Okay. So that said, and you, I guess you will can elaborate a little bit on what Steve just said. Per your knowledge of how the industry works here in Texas, the funeral home at any time, once they, as they say, get that first call, what is the protocol that must occur within the 24-hour, between the first 24-hour period after the funeral home picks up a body?
Well, it depends on that particular funeral home, what their policies and procedures are. Different funeral homes have different policies. I'm not exactly sure what the law states in Texas. Again, I have to refer back to the particular law, if there is one, or of course, consult the Funeral Service Commission as far as there being a law about refrigerating or embalming within 24 hours. But it's really to the discretion of the funeral provider. Some funeral providers have policies and procedures as to where if they pick up a decedent, and it is uncertain as to what type of disposition or what type of service the family is wanting, then you are to refrigerate the body within 3 hours, 8 hours. Some funeral homes require you to refrigerate within 12 hours. Some funeral homes require you to refrigerate within 24. But, again, it's
now,
are these
embalmed bodies you're talking about that you have to be
no,
refrigerated?
No, what I'm speaking of is unembalmed bodies. Once a body has been embalmed, there's no need for refrigeration. Depending on the state of the body, sometimes a body can be in a certain state of decomposition, sometimes first state or second state of decomposition, and a body is embalmed. And following that embalming procedure, the body is placed into refrigeration because of the state of decomposition. I'm sorry, Dr. Skeezer, go ahead.
I find it strange that they would actually would keep one unrefrigerated for up to 12 hours. Unrefrigerated because, you know how decomposition works, and it begins immediately. And I mean, that's just very strange. And I don't understand why they wouldn't. I mean, why? I worked years and years ago in the funeral industry, and I knew, you know, when we picked the body up, we either refrigerated it or embalmed it, and they're in or there. And have you seen this, Mr. Jones? Have you seen the photographs of this case?
I have seen the photographs, and the photographs were just, for lack of a better term, just breathtaking. After she explained to me the series of events and what the funeral providers had told her about her mother and what they said that they had done, when I saw the pictures, my exact words immediately after I saw the pictures was, no, it looks to me that your mother was left out in the elements. If they told you that they placed her in a refrigeration unit, looking at the condition of her mother, she was not placed in a refrigeration unit, or the refrigeration unit was not working properly.
It doesn't even look to me like she was in an air-conditioned room.
Right. LaChris, was it during the summer months when this happened?
June.
Yes, it was June. It was like 103, 104 heat index of 112.
That's what those photos look like to me. I mean, and I know they do to you too, Mr. Jones. They look just like somebody who's been laying in the sun.
All right, given the time, the amount of time that went by, and like I explained before, decomposition or the rate of decomposition is based off of chemical reactions that go off in the body depending on what type of medical drugs that the decedent may have been taking. Also, outside elements such as temperature, whether the decedent is in a high or heated temperature, then the rate of decomposition is gonna be quicker.
Right. In this case, you know, she had all the edema from the Coumadin therapy and all of that. So she had a lot of tissue, blood. So that, and she was obese. So that she would have decomposed a lot quicker.
And that's exactly. I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly what I explained to LaCrisha. I said your mother was obese, and usually obese people will decompose quicker. The temperature was very hot, they decomposed quicker. And plus, she had a severe amount of desquamation, a lot of skin slippage. The body was definitely in a state of change. And looking at that, she was not, in my opinion, she wasn't refrigerated at all.
Okay.
And that's it.
In the state of Texas, is it safe to say then, Mr. Jones, that within the first 24 hours, the body either needs to be embalmed, cremated, or refrigerated?
Yes, it is safe to say that, but I do not know if that is an actual law or not. Our laws change, of course, you know, again, I have to reference it. But, yes, it is safe to say that. And in my own opinion, anyone with any amount of integrity would have done that in at least 12 hours or less. Again, sometimes it is 24 hours, and that's sometimes not uncommon.
You know, To me, it is criminal that this case, this woman could have had an open casket funeral. Had the funeral home, she would have had, because of the edema and the swelling and the sanguination of blood. She would have been a difficult job to embalm, no doubt. But she would have been viewable, and it's unconscionable that it looks like they just left her laying in a hallway in the sun.
Again, looking at the pictures, I agree again. That's exactly what it looks like that happened. But hopefully once she goes to litigation, hopefully and prayerfully, I hope that can be proven. I really do, because looking at the pictures, no one should suffer anything like that. Your mother is a terrible loss to experience.
As funeral professionals,
we're imperfect people working toward perfection, because we only get one opportunity to provide a funeral for people who choose us. And when you're negligent like that, there's no way for us to go back and do it again.
I agree. Well, Chris, let me ask one more question that I wanted to press on or make a point of on June 21st. I understand that you told me that on the 21st you actually went to the funeral home on three different occasions on the 21st, on that Monday following your mother's death, the 21st.
Correct.
Okay. So, at that point, no one in all the three times that you went up there that day said anything about there was a problem and that the body was not being refrigerated.
No.
Okay.
How many times did you ask to see your mother and they refused you?
Every time I went up there.
So you asked to see her and they said no. Did they ever give you a reason why they wouldn't let you see her?
That she wasn't prepped and ready yet.
That's bizarre.
Well, listening to if I may chime in right here, that is bizarre. There are certain procedures that can be done to a deceased individual without that individual actually being embalmed to prepare them suitable enough to be viewed by their loved ones. There's a procedure of bedding features that can be done.
Exactly.
And that person can be viewed without actually being arterially embalmed. So, again, listening to what you're saying, the series of events, I don't know if the lady that you were speaking with at the time was aware of the body being in the state that it was in, and they were trying to cover for what particular reason, it just doesn't sound right as well. I mean, there are certain things that you can do, certainly, to allow for family members to view a body prior to embalming and definitely after embalming.
Okay, then let's fast forward to the 22nd, which was that Tuesday following your mother's death. Okay, When you did you contact them on the 22nd, or did they contact you on the 22nd? What was the events that occurred on the 22nd?
What happened was they contacted me because they said that it was some paperwork that Amy Grigaski at American Forensics needed signed, and told her I had no problem signing it. If I'm not mistaken, we signed it through fax. I really can't remember.
Okay.
But it got done.
Okay,
it got done.
So the paperwork for American Forensic to conduct the autopsy was given some kind of way, either, and I understand you don't remember everything, but either you went there and signed it, or they faxed it to you and you signed it.
Correct.
But they did get back on Tuesday, the 22nd. Okay, and so at that particular time, didn't you ask what your mother's condition was at that particular time?
Yes, I asked the funeral director. I'm like, okay, is my mother's body going to be okay being in the cooler this long, you know, while we're still waiting on the pathologist? And I was explained and told, yes, she's completely fine. Later on that afternoon, I got a phone call from American Forensics, which was from Amy Grigaski, letting me know that she wasn't coming to do the autopsy. Basically, what I was told was that my mother was taken out of the cooler Monday for them to do the autopsy Tuesday. I got a phone call from Amy Grigaski Tuesday letting me know that her colleague, Dr. Gwynn, would be coming to do the autopsy himself Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Well, let me back up. If I remember our conversation, and we always do pre-interviews here at Center Stage, I understood that they told you there was a reason that she had to be pulled from the cooler. What was the reason that she had to be pulled from the cooler in order for the autopsy?
Before they could do the autopsy, her body had to be thawed out.
Okay. So
now, was it a cooler or a freezer?
That's exactly what I was about to say.
There's a big difference, and they wouldn't have frozen. I mean, there's no autopsy protocol. How come it was so long before the autopsy was done?
I'm really not for sure. From what the owner states, he states that they couldn't get insurance information verified, which when my mother passed, I contacted the insurance company myself on that Monday, because there were three different policies. One was in my name, one was in my name and my brother's name, who had also passed away 2 months before, and it was another one in his name by himself. The insurance company explained to me that I needed to give them the policy with my name on it, so that way it would go a lot faster.
Did you have a prepaid funeral insurance?
No, this was my mother's insurance.
Okay, so you're not.
Yeah, I think what she's saying, doctor, she had an at-need service. There wasn't a pre-need service that she had, and she was using life insurance to fund the funeral. And you had several beneficiaries. She had several beneficiaries of one policy, and that may have. Is that what you're saying, Chris? That's what delayed, because you're needing to get all of those particular signatures on your policy in order for them to assign the funds to the funeral home for
the funeral, the insurance company, since my brother was already deceased, and the insurance policy, there was an insurance policy with just my name on it, with my single name on it.
Did you have to provide them with a death certificate?
No, because I did not have to give them the one with my brother's name on it. I gave them the one with my single name on it that was left for me. That's the one that I gave to them.
So the funeral home did not have any money. They were wanting money from you to do the funeral.
I gave them the insurance policy that my mother left me, and I had signed it and gave it to them, and they had all the chance in the world to call the same way I called and let them know that my mother was deceased.
Okay,
did
insurance
they,
company.
Was the amount of the insurance policy enough to cover the funeral costs?
He matched it to a T.
Okay.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm just,
okay,
this case is just really strange.
I want the audience, because you know what, Steve Novacek knows the story and Mr. Jones knows the story, y'all, but the audience doesn't know the story. And so we got to follow this timeline so that people can understand why Ms. Thompson is so upset, why this particular situation has come to the fact that, you know, she actually had to retain an attorney and actually pursue a lawsuit against this particular funeral director because she feels like something was taken from her and her family that she can never regain. So let's go back, y'all, because I want to get this timeline right. So we're talking about Tuesday. You fax the paperwork back. Everything is at that point. What are you understanding once you got the paperwork back to the autopsy?
Hey, Carrie.
Yes.
Let me interject something because I'm going to have to get off of here.
Oh,
but
okay.
Here, let me interject this thing. All of this timeline and all of that's irrelevant because this woman should have been in a refrigerator. It doesn't make any difference who's doing what. Somebody is negligent because she was not in a refrigerator, and it's that simple. And I think Mr. Jones would agree with me about that. That's she should have been in a refrigerator. Period. So.
And stating, I'm sorry, Carrie, but piggybacking on Dr. Novacek, it's obvious reasons. Looking at the pictures, something obviously went wrong. And from Dr. Novacek's background and my background, we can tell from the pictures exactly what has gone wrong. The point is that, getting those details and getting those facts together so that it can be proven and get our timeline down. But something obviously has went wrong. Somebody was obviously negligent. So we really have to get everything together so that we can get that proven.
Okay.
Yeah.
Steve, I know you got to get off, and you all see, and I appreciate that, Mr. Jones. Steve did tell us in advance. Only spent a little time with us tonight, and that's why we brought him up early so that he could tell us his professional opinion. So, Stephen, your professional opinion, something went terribly wrong, and this body, you're stating, per your professional experience, was never refrigerated.
What I'm saying is that it is unconscionable what has happened to this lady, that I cannot imagine anybody that has a heart and a soul allowing this to happen to someone's loved one. It's unbelievable to me.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to come on tonight. We know you got other obligations, but thank you so much for staying.
All right,
good
luck. And my condolences to you, ma'am.
Thank you, sir.
All right, bye.
Bye. Okay, y'all, that was Mr. Steve Novacek, so famously known for being the coroner in the HBO documentary Banging in Little Rock some years ago, but if you Google it, it's still out there and you can see it for yourself, but he's a great man and a great coroner. Okay, so Lucretia, back to the timeline, simply because, y'all, Steve does not understand the relevance of this timeline because it makes so many things clearer to myself, to I'm sure the audience once they understand and listen to it. So we're going to go back to the timeline just for the sake of everybody understanding as we understand. So the paperwork was faxed back, and everything is a go that American Forensics was going to do the autopsy, and that was Tuesday. But you received a call from Dr. Amy Gruzeski, and you were told that she was not going to be able to perform the autopsy on Tuesday, but that she would do it on Wednesday. No, she wouldn't do it, but her colleague, Dr. Gwynn, would do it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what happens at that point?
Basically, at that point, we're fast-forwarding to Wednesday, which would be the 23rd.
Okay, let me ask you this. Back up 1 second. Did you get a chance to speak to anybody else with Angel Hill Funeral Directors that evening? Did you talk with the chief embalmer? Did you speak with anybody else on Tuesday night?
No, not on Tuesday.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
But on Wednesday, yes.
Okay, and what happened on Wednesday? So Wednesday, now we're all the way to the 23rd.
Right.
And your mother expired on the 19th.
Right.
Okay.
On the 23rd, I was informed by the chief embalmer, by the chief funeral director,
mm-hmm.
as I found out, that I would be able to, once the autopsy was done, that I would be able to dress my mother and do her hair once the autopsy was done, and I could also sit in on the embalming if I wanted to.
Okay. Which I find odd, but, you know, okay.
Carrie, what she said she wanted to sit in, that's some families surprisingly do request that, and if they do request that, we have to allow it.
Really, I didn't know that.
We will do our best to discourage it. But if they do want to observe that procedure, then yes, we do have to allow them to observe that procedure.
Okay, can we ask who this person is that's telling you that you can sit in and do this? Can we ask his name, or do you prefer not to say his name? It's up to you. We can move on. I just had a name here, but
I don't mind. Trini Faggett.
Okay. That was the chief embalmer.
Correct.
Okay. And he stated, did he say that he had seen your mother's body and what the condition was? Did he tell you what the condition of your mother's body was?
No. When I spoke with him Wednesday morning, afternoon, just throughout the day, several times throughout the day, he stated he had not even been to the funeral home, so he had not even seen my mother, and that I could meet him there at 7 p.m.
And he was going to allow you to dress her and comb her hair?
Right, to get her dressed, comb her hair, and after they got through with the autopsy, embalmer, if her mom wanted to watch that, which I am into stuff like that. But, yeah. But
okay.
When I got to the funeral home at 7 p.m., when I stepped outside the car, there was an odor that I will never forget. It stank. When I went inside the funeral home, the lights were down low. The odor was horrific.
Mm.
I had never smelled it before. I even made the comment off of Boys in the Hood, hey, y'all want to see a dead body? You know, just playing around. I sat my mother things down in the chair. I walked around, steady saying hello, didn't see anyone, so I walked towards the back of the funeral home to where I saw light.
Okay, so let me back up here. 7 p.m. and nobody's in the lobby, nobody's anywhere to be found at 7 p.m.
Nobody was there to greet you when you
no.
arrived there?
No.
Can I ask a question, Carrie, real quick?
Sure.
You mentioned, I think, on this particular day that you're there at this time, what day of the week is it?
On a Wednesday.
And your mom had been dead since that Sunday, that previous Sunday, is that correct?
She had passed away Saturday.
She had passed away that previous Saturday. And you
yes.
say the embalmer was to meet you there on this particular day that you're there, which is Wednesday.
Correct.
At 7 p.m. And previously, he told you, before Wednesday, he told you that you could dress and do your mother's hair.
Right. He told me that
okay.
Wednesday.
It sounds like to me that he wasn't there until that Wednesday, he probably didn't see your mother until that Wednesday, because to tell the state of decomposition that your mother was in, that just didn't happen on Wednesday. They'd had to have started on Monday or Tuesday of that week to get to that.
He had not seen her at all because he had a second job, well, his first job. So he had not seen her at all, nor had he been at the funeral home. So he did not know what was going on.
Exactly. That's the understanding that I'm trying to get, because what I did not understand was, why would he tell you that you can dress and do your mom's hair if he had known that she was in that state of decomposition? So, I don't know. Okay.
He didn't know till I got there. Of course, of walking through the funeral home, I walked to the back of the funeral home to where it was like an open garage area.
Hold on one second, y'all. Before she tells any more about that, this is where it starts to get deep. So if anybody just tuned in, does not know what we're talking about, let me just bring you up to speed. If you just tuned in, you've come center stage for the topic of funeral nightmare. We're talking with Lucretia Steele Thompson. She's the daughter of Annie Thompson. If you're viewing by the web, you'll see the pictures up front. Those are the pictures of Miss Annie Thompson. That's what we're talking about tonight. Her family says that her homegoing services went terribly wrong, and that's what tonight's show is all about. Our guest tonight was Mr. Steve Novacek, who had to leave us, Mr. Jones, and, again, Lucretia Steele Thompson. We, in trying to provide balance in this show, reached out to the Texas Funeral Commission, who chose not to make a comment. We also reached out to Angel Hill Funeral Home on several, we made several attempts today, in fact. Several times y'all was on the phone. I don't know what that was about, but I did finally leave a message, and I asked the owner to please call me. The owner of record chose to be Lonnie Wright Sr. I made an attempt via leaving a message to say to Mr. Wright, if you'd like to be on the show to give your side of the story, please feel free to contact me. We can arrange that. I also told him, you know, listen, I'm trying to show balance. I really want to know what, you know, you say happened. But as of airtime, we did not hear back from Angel Hill Funeral Directors nor the owner of record, Lonnie Wright Sr. Okay, so y'all, we're back to the point where Lucretia is telling us she has entered the funeral. Well, she got out of her car. She smelled an odor she hadn't smelled before, only to go into the funeral home and realize that the odor was coming, indeed, from the funeral home. She goes into the lobby. No one is around. She begins to walk down the hall trying to see if anybody else was in the building. At that point, Lucretia, what happened?
I walk out into a, garage, open-type area. And I walk up on a white male that was in scrubs, and I asked him, did he work there? And he told me no. And so I was like, okay, well, what are you doing here? And he was like, I have a job to do. And then I asked him for his name, and he told me that his name was Dr. Gwynn. And I say, oh, okay, well, have you finished my mother's autopsy? And so he said, are you Lucretia Thompson? And I said, yes. And he stated, well, no, I have not started. And it was already 7 p.m. Yeah. So I asked him, I say, what is that god-awful smell? And he stated to me, he said, that is your mother, and I cannot state anything else. And he went in the room, and he closed the door.
Okay, stop right there. Let me be clear so that I understand and everybody else understands what you're saying. You are walking down this hall and you encounter a white man who says that he doesn't work there, but he was there to perform an autopsy. You ask him who he is. He says Dr. Gwynn, and you come to the conclusion that this is the man that's there to do the autopsy on your mother. And at that point, you ask him, what is the smell that you've been trying to figure out what it was? And he tells you that that smell is your mother?
Correct.
Did he say why there was the smell?
No. He just said, that is your mother. And he said, I have to get to work. And he went in and he closed the door.
Carrie,
yes.
I have a quick question again. LaCrisha, at this time, has it been established? Is anybody associated with the funeral home itself? Are they there? Or are you just, again, just leisurely walking around this funeral home at 7 o'clock?
I'm leisurely.
Is the owner there?
Is
the owner there? Is the embalmer there? Or any? No one's there from the funeral home itself?
No, I'm walking around.
I'm
walking around the funeral home saying hello, like I'm upset now. I'm calling the embalmer on his phone, and he finally comes out of his office, and he's shaking his head, and he takes me into the conference room, and he sits me down.
There. He just wasn't.
So this is who again?
The embalmer, the chief embalmer.
The Trini Faggot person.
Correct.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
So he was there. He was just in the office, and I don't know if he heard you calling or not, but he finally came out of the office that he was in, and he greeted you there at that time?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, what happened then?
He took me into a conference room. He asked me to have a seat. He sat down beside me, and he just started shaking his head. And I asked him, like, what's the problem? And, like, what the hell is that smell? Like, y'all don't smell that? And he just shook his head, and he was like, the funeral home fucked up. And I'm like,
the chief embalmer is not saying he messed up. He's saying that Angel Hill funeral director is messed up. Is that what I'm understanding you say?
He said the funeral home fucked up.
Okay. And then what does he say?
And I'm like, they fucked up how? He was like, well, I don't know what happened as far as who put her in the cooler, who didn't put her back in the cooler, as far as the autopsy, but something happened to where she's in second stage of decomposition. Mm-hmm. I watch a lot of TV. I know what second stage of decomposition is.
Okay.
And I'm like, how can somebody be in second stage of decomposition just within 3 to 4 days? And he was like, I've been wrecking my brain trying to figure that out. I don't know if it was, you know, he was just like, he didn't know, basically.
Okay.
So
wow.
He's the embalmer, and he's saying he doesn't know what happened.
Right.
He's the chief embalmer, and he's saying he doesn't know what happened. Okay.
Right. So basically, I took my tears. I took my mother's clothes and her bag. And
you took them. You're about to take them away. At this point, have you been told are you understanding what at this point?
I'm understanding that she cannot be embalmed.
Okay.
Like once they got through with the autopsy, she could not be embalmed.
Okay.
There was no help for her after the autopsy was done. What he explained to me was that she would have to be placed in several trash bags, doused with different types of powder and whatever they use to control the smell.
Wow. He actually used those words with you? Trash bags,
yes.
And powder?
Yes.
Wow.
It's a pretty low level of professionalism. He wasn't tactful enough to use. He told your mother that he would place her in several trash bags.
Right. I don't know if he did this because we were friends.
Okay,
and
so
had
you
been
know
friends
him.
So long. Yes, we
you
all, yes.
Okay.
Yes, we went to, he If I'm not mistaken, he graduated with my brother, but we all went to school together, yes.
Okay. So maybe he felt a comfort level to be just raw with you, if you will, and explain to you, I guess, down to the most minute detail about what was about to happen. But how were you like, handling this information? Because for me, I would be on overload. But for you, how are you processing all of this as you're being told, you know, your mother is going to be put in trash bags as opposed to an open casket. They're not going to be able to embalm her. You can't determine why she wasn't refrigerated at this point. So how are you processing all this information at this particular point?
Actually, once I was told all of that and I got home, I never sugarcoat anything and I don't lie about anything. I basically got home and took like 7 Xanaxes.
Wow.
I sat on it and I thought about it. The next morning, I contacted the owner of the funeral home, and me and my cousin, Tracy, we went and met him.
Wow. Okay. So you're at this point, you're what? Are you enraged? Are you emotionally enraged?
I was enraged. I was hurt. I cried. My biggest thing was some of my family got to come up to the hospital and see my mother. My daughter at the time, who was 10, she got to come up to the funeral, to the hospital and see my mother. My son at the time, who was 16, did not. My mother raised him, even though I was in the household, that was her child. He did not get to see her at all. He had been gone on spring break for like two, not spring break, but he had been gone from like for the summer for like 2 weeks. So he did not get to see her at all. That was my biggest concern, that, okay, he's not going to get to see her, period. So I was enraged. I was upset. I called the owner several times, cussing, whatever. But we met Thursday morning. We met him, me and my cousin. We met at the front of the room.
Okay, the owner of record chose to be Lonnie Wright Sr. Is that who we were referring to?
Correct.
Okay. And what happened?
He started out, real cocky, arrogant, taking no blame. You have the tape recording, don't you?
I do. And my audio, you all, I do have the audio, and I have listened to it several times. And we tried to play it to get the volume up so that the audience could hear, and we were not able to successfully get the audio to a level that the audience would be able to hear. Lucretia, if you have your copy and can play it, we'd be glad to hear it. This was a recording of what?
This was a recording of me, him, and my cousin speaking about what had happened.
Okay.
Who was at fault? How it happened? Why it happened? And
who recorded the conversation?
My cousin recorded the conversation.
Okay. So was Mr. Wright aware that he was being recorded?
No, he was not aware that he was being recorded, but what I found out, if it's a two-way conversation between someone, it is against the law, but if it's a third party recording the conversation, then it's not against the law, and she was the third party. And with me being on my cell phone, I can't play the recording. But basically it started out with him just basically stating that you know, I didn't sign this paper or I didn't sign that paper, and that's the reason why there was a delay in this thing or that thing.
Well, I tell you what we will try to do. We will let you listen to what we have, and if you can hear it, audience, you can. If not, this is our best attempt, so we can play what we have.
Okay.
Okay, let's go. We're going to try to let you listen to the audio. We're going to do it, and let me get in. Okay, let's see what happens. This is the audio of you and your cousin and the owner of records for Angel Hill Funeral Home in a conversation on what date?
That would have been that Thursday.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, you can't hear it.
Okay. So that's our audio. We made every attempt to try to get the recording louder. We did all kinds of things, and we were just not able to make that happen. But so in the conversation, what is being said in the conversation?
Basically, what he's stating is that he has people that work for him. He doesn't know everything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that goes on there. So, he was not claiming any fault at all.
Mm-hmm.
No one, yeah, he was not accepting fault, period.
May I ask a question real quick? This is something I'm... LaCrista, did he ever tell you when you made the phone call to the funeral home to take care of your mom, of course, your mom ultimately ended up at the funeral home. Was he the one who actually made the removal, or was it one of his employees, or did he use a third-party contractor to make the removal for him? Do you know that, or did he say that?
The Mr. Jones, can you clarify what removal means for all of us who don't know?
Removal is actually taking possession of the deceased body.
Okay.
Going to the place of death, taking possession of it, and bringing it back to the funeral home, or taking it to a third-party contractor, which would be a mortuary service, which is a company that services funeral homes. And what they do for the funeral homes is they make removals for the funeral homes, they do embalming, and they provide refrigeration service for funeral homes who do not have refrigeration. The reason I'm asking the question is I'm still trying to figure out, again, the ultimate thing, and I think that's what we're all trying to do, is why your mom was never placed in refrigeration. And the reason I ask that is because, again, some funeral homes will contract a third-party company to make the removal for them. For example, if you call me and you say, Mr. Jones, my mom has just passed away, we're wanting you to handle the arrangements. Okay, LaCrista, that's fine. We'll go pick up your mom. Where's your mother at right now? Once I get off the phone with you, now either myself, personally, I'm going to go to the place of death and make the removal. My staff, some of my staff may be on call to do that for the evening. They may go. Or some funeral homes employ, again, a third-party contractor in the form of a mortuary service or in the form of a transport service. Both the transport and the mortuary service, both are going to provide a service to make the removal and transport the decedent to either the funeral home or back to the mortuary service. Some funeral homes do not actually embalm in their facility. They utilize a mortuary service to do their removals and do their embalming. And once the embalming is complete, then that mortuary service will deliver the body to the funeral home of choice. Or the mortuary service will make the removal and bring the body back to the funeral home. So what I'm trying to, I don't know if he told you that he specifically picked your mom up or one of his staff members, and if it was one of his staff members, who was it? Because you need to know whoever picked your mom up, what did they do once they got back to the mortuary, once they got back to the funeral home? Did they just leave her in a holding area? thinking that another staff member, maybe the embalmer, was going to come in the next morning or a couple of hours later and place her in the cooler or embalm her, and he probably didn't do that. So you understand what I'm saying? There may have been some type of breakdown of communication, or, again, ultimately we know someone is liable and negligent, but I'm trying to figure out the whole reason why she just was never placed in a refrigeration unit, either at the funeral home or at a mortuary service. Even more so once they knew that you were going to have a private autopsy performed on your mother. It just doesn't make any sense. Anyone who's in funeral service know, again, if the person is obese and you're in the month of June in the state of Texas, you absolutely do not leave that type of body out in the elements without refrigerating or embalming, because you know that that body is going to decompose, and that body is going to decompose quick, which is what happened with your mother.
Let me ask you a question then before Lucretia answers that question. That said, whose job typically is it or is there a assigned person typically in funeral homes where when a body comes in, their job is to make certain that the bodies are, you know, embalmed, cremated, refrigerated? Is there someone typically assigned to make certain that every single body is accounted for, toe-tagged, and all of those types of things?
Well, generally, the entire staff is responsible for that, because at any given time, the embalmer may not be on the premises when the decedent arrives at the funeral home. The funeral director in charge may not be on the premises at the time that the decedent arrives at the funeral. There may just be an attendant. And an attendant is a person who simply is employed by the funeral home to do miscellaneous services, drive cars, attend wakes, attend funerals, answer the phone, sweep, mop, things of that sort, greet people as they come in. And that person may have been there. Now, again, we go back to particular policies that certain funeral homes may have. Some funeral homes have policies where they do not allow attendants to handle a deceased individual at all. For certain litigious reasons, that particular individual who is not, attendants are generally not licensed by the state of Texas to practice as an embalmer or a funeral director. So funeral homes don't like to get into liabilities as far as, for example, a person who's an attendant ends their employer-employee relationship with a funeral home, and they end that under disgruntlement. They can come back and say, well, I contracted a disease or I contracted an illness, or you caused me to be exposed to something, and then that funeral home is liable for that. So some funeral homes do not even allow attendants to handle the decedent until it reaches a certain state, until that decedent is dressed and placed in a casket. Then the attendant can handle. But then some other funeral homes will allow attendants to handle the decedent. The attendant is the one who makes the removal, and that attendant has enough sense, has enough general sense to know that, okay, if this body is not going to be embalmed right now, let me go ahead and place it in the cooler until the embalmer comes and he knows what to do. But you just do not leave the body sitting out. And again, I don't know if this body was sitting in the garage area or the embalming room, but definitely if it was in the garage area, again, you're in the month of June in the state of Texas, 100-plus degree weather. That's just something that common sense, at a fundamental.
Well, let me ask you one more question then, Mr. Jones. I've never worked in a funeral home, and I'm not pretending to have any knowledge at all of anything dealing with funeral services. But I would think that two things that anyone working in a funeral home would be familiar with would be rigor mortis and a decomposing body, the smell of a decomposing body.
Yes, you're right, and that's very true. There are certain fundamental things that a person who is associated with a funeral home knows. You know the smell is a very pungent smell, a very heavy, pungent, piercing smell of a decomposed body. It's a very heavy, astringent smell.
So is it safe to say that whenever the decomposition of Annie Thompson began, that anyone on staff should have known there was a problem?
Anyone associated with that funeral home at any amount of time, yes, should have known what that smell was. Whether it had been an attendant, the licensed embalmer, the licensed funeral director, any of those individuals, the funeral home owner, or even, I even go as far as the receptionist, all will know what that odor is. I mean, even the common for the most part, even a common individual knows what that smell is. Any human knows the smell of a decomposed human, which
well,
is why you find people all the time on the news who are jogging or around their own environment, their own property, and they pick up on that smell, and it causes them to investigate or call the police because they think they smell a dead human.
Well, I think if I heard Lucretia correctly a few minutes ago, she said the chief embalmer told her, at some point he told you that your mother was in second stage decomposition.
Correct. He told me that
that
Wednesday.
So
he told you that the night, then I'm sorry, Carrie, but he told you that the night that you arrived there for the autopsy and you met the pathologist there when you were walking around the funeral home looking for someone.
Correct.
Do you know if that was the first time he had, like I said, did he say that was the first time he had seen your mom?
That was, yes. He had told me that was the first time that he had seen my mother.
So she had been dead since that Saturday, and she had been at the funeral home, assumedly so, since that Saturday. And that was the first time that he had seen her. So he had already told you that you could do this and do that and do her hair and things without even knowing the state that she was in.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm trying to see if you guys can hear this playlist, just a part of it, and let me know if you can hear it.
Okay.
Give me 1 second.
Okay. Before you begin, if you just tuned in, you come center stage tonight for the topic of funeral nightmare. We're talking with Lucretia Steele Thompson. She's the daughter of Annie Thompson. If you're able to view us via the web, you see the pictures of the before and after of this Annie Steele, Miss Annie Thompson, when she was alive, and then, of course, once she was deceased. Our guest tonight was Mr. Steve Novacek, who had to leave us early, Mr. Jones, who is not his real name, who is a embalmer and a funeral home director. Funeral Service Director in the state of Texas. We reached out to the Texas Funeral Commission, and they chose not to make a comment. We also reached out to Angel Hill Funeral Directors in an attempt to show balance in reporting on this story. We do not want to be the judge or the jury in this situation. We're just simply reporting a story, and we're allowing Lucretia Steele Thompson to tell her mother's story tonight. So, again, we reached out to the Texas Funeral Commission for their comment because it is currently under investigation, and we did reach out to the owner of Angel Hill Funeral Directors, Mr. Lonnie Wright Sr., who is the owner of record. And we made several attempts. We were hung up on several times, and we did finally leave a message and ask him if he would like to be a part of the program, so please feel free to give me a call, and we did not receive a call from him all the air time. Okay, Lucretia, I'm sorry. You're going to now play for us the tape.
I'm just trying to see if y'all can hear it from my end. Let me know if you can hear it. If not, then I'll stop it.
Okay. This is the tape of Lucretia, her cousin.
Yeah.
She cannot live as far as she can home.
Decomposing is
she was out of the cooler. So if Shamika didn't come Monday and
she was supposed to come Tuesday. Well, not Tuesday.
Okay, could y'all hear that?
We can hear. There was some grainy parts.
Barely.
Yeah, we can just
okay,
barely
I have
hear.
A second half of this that I would like to play. Just give me a second to get to it. And it's where he is stating that he will give me my money back in full.
Okay, again, Lucrece is about to play a recording that she did where she was present.
Give me 1 second. I'm just trying to get
the owner of Money Right was present and her cousin was present.
I wasn't ready to do stuff that was on the wall. I was already with the insurance company.
I told you when I said that, it's not the money. And so, like I said, I'll give you a file for a 24 cemetery. Yeah, I'll do that. So
now, y'all tell me, I'm here for nothing.
So you want me to give you $10,000?
I want to go to my mom's hospital. The job,
I don't have that.
Well, whenever you did, I'm going to be, and I'm going to be confident. And it ain't so much time, like, because y'all do something for me. It ain't like me to just leave. My mom raised my kids. So y'all do something for my kids. My kids, I just leave my mom. So, yeah. I need to be helpful. For real. Whatever, however, whatever, I'm not going to get my attorney involved, which I'm trying not to, or whatever. Nigga called me last night, daddy said she's sorry, 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 and I ain't her, like I told her, yeah, I ain't talking about, but the whole thing is, y'all put her up to school, but ain't nobody to see her. But I walked in her yesterday, he spanked in her, and like Trey's like, you don't want to see her, but I actually do want to see my mom, but I'm not paying for nothing. So whatever y'all pay for,
so,
you pay
for. You saying I had to come over? If all this took place, you knew she was exactly going to be involved. You the head can't, you don't want to know this. Why didn't you change?
He didn't even say it. He said yesterday was his first time seeing her.
Okay, he's my head guy. He's the one I depend on. And he's telling you this.
Okay, I'm going to stop it right there. I don't know if y'all could hear.
We can hear. We definitely.
Okay. I'm just going to say. But basically, it was about to run out anyway. But basically,
go ahead.
Basically, bottom line is he stated he would give me my money back as long as I wouldn't sue. I never stated that I wouldn't sue.
That part we can hear very well. He says he did not have $10,500 and that he would have to borrow the money to give it back to you. We also said that I heard him say on the tape that he would get you reimbursed. I heard him tell you on that tape that let's just say that if this is Lonnie Wright Sr. speaking with LaKeisha on that tape, then the man I hear, I should say it like that, the man that I hear on that tape is saying that he didn't have $10,500, but that he would borrow the money to get it back to you. He said that he would get you reimbursed. I also heard him say that he had agreed to your terms. So it was after he had said he would give you the $10,500, but he said you were still going to ask for more money, I think is what I understood him to say. And then
Because I told him I needed to be compensated. Like, this is not just your everyday funeral.
Now, one thing I heard him say on the other tape that really troubled me, yeah, I think it was the other tape, he said the funeral services would have actually originally cost you $12,000.
He told me that the actual funeral service would have cost me $12,000. When I buried my brother died in Corpus Christi. I think the most that I spent on his funeral was maybe $10,511, and he died in Corpus Christi. I had to have him embalmed there and brought back here, and then Gregory Spencer did his funeral. So that was way cheaper. But no, when I gave him that insurance policy for $10,500, he matched the insurance policy for $10,500 to the T. They did not do the programs. Gregory Spencer did the programs for me. They did not supply the flowers for the casket. My ex-boyfriend did the spray for the casket. It was a lot of stuff that they did not do, but he was still trying to, like, I think basically what it finally came down to was, like, $99.30.
Can I take something real? Carrie LaCroix.
Sure.
There's something that I took notice of when I was listening to the recording. It was very difficult to hear, but there were some things that I did take notice of. And the male that was speaking, one thing that I do want to speak on is when Dr. Novacek was on, if you remember, Dr. Novacek asked you a series of questions regarding your insurance policy. You remember that?
Yeah.
Before he got off the line, I wanted to interject so that I can give some understanding as to why he was asking you those questions. If you remember on the recording that you just played, the male on the recording stated that he stated some things about him trying to get the insurance policy verified. Do you remember hearing that?
Right.
Okay. A lot of times, and this is in no way defending him, I'm just stating to you what happens and what some people do. And what this is that I'm about to explain to you is in no way right at all. It's very wrong, but what some funeral homes will do is if the individual, is using a life insurance policy to fund your loved one's funeral, then a lot of times the funeral home will not do anything until they have verified the insurance policy. And let me explain what I mean when they say they need to verify the insurance policy. When you have when you give a life insurance policy over to a funeral home for the purpose of funding a funeral service, They have to call that insurance company, and they have to find out, number one, if that is a viable insurance policy. if there has been any type of loans that have been taken out of the policy, which then reduces the face amount of the policy. Mm-hmm. And they have to find out if the policy will cover the face of the contract. They also have to find out if the policy is assignable, which means that the particular policy can be given over. You're pretty much given the authority of the insurance company to pay the funeral home directly. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of times, some funeral homes, and you find this a lot with smaller private-owned funeral homes, if they have not verified the insurance policy, so in layman's terms, they're uncertain on how they're going to get paid, then they're not going to do anything. They're not going to do any embalming. Sometimes they won't even make the removal of the body until they're sure how they're going to get paid. Now, mind you, that's a terrible practice. It's not.
Let me ask you this. Are you stating that some funeral homes are taking possession of the body and basically leaving the body in a warm building until they confirm whether or not the insurance policy is good? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is that's what sounds like that has happened in this situation, is what I'm saying.
Well,
because the reason I say that is because he made comments on your insurance policy many, many times, and he said it several times that they were not able to verify her funds. And you already said that they took their policy and they took the contract and they matched it to your policy penny for penny.
Exactly.
But they were not even providing you with the same amount of services that another funeral home, another funeral provider provided you, that was at least that was not as expensive as that.
But the way that I explained it to Linda Cooper, when I met with her three times that Monday, I explained to her when I gave her that policy. I said, if anything gets held up with this policy, let me know so I can pay for it out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything that I need to pay for out of pocket, let me know to where y'all can begin. She told me, oh, no, it doesn't take no longer than a day to verify everything, and we can go from there.
Yeah.
That's what she told me. Now, something else that I want to speak on, and I don't mean to jump ahead,
okay,
because I'm supposed to be following protocol.
No, go ahead.
The chief embalmer and the funeral director of Angel Hill's funeral home at that time was Trini Faggett.
Okay.
Now, even though this was my homeboy, when he found out that Lonnie stated that he would give me back my 10-5. He stated to me, if I was you, I would just take that and leave it alone. Me not knowing that he was the one that's bonded and insured, that Linda Cooper was the one that was bonded and insured.
Wow.
So they were also at fault. Even though Trini did not come to that funeral home, he was at fault himself.
Well, let me back up.
So
even though
my lawsuit is against Lonnie Wright, everybody that worked there, Trini was the chief embalmer and the funeral director. He is at fault also for my mother's death.
It's kind of.
Yeah. Okay. We're hearing some noise background from you, Mr. Jones.
Yes, can you? I'm sorry.
We were hearing some interference coming from your end.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, that's better. That's better. Okay, then let's fast forward to Friday. Friday is the wake, y'all. But before we tell you what happened Friday, and it gets worse, trust me, it gets worse. Let me tell you, if you just tuned in, what you're listening to, because you're probably going, what are those people talking about? Well, we're talking about the home going services of Miss Annie Thompson. If you just tuned in, you come center stage for the topic of funeral nightmare. On the phone lines, we have Lucretia Steele Thompson and Mr. Jones, not his real name, but for the sake of the fact that he worked in the industry in the same area in which the show is taking place. We're just not going to use his real name. That said, and we also had Mr. Steve Novacek on with us earlier, the ex-coroner for Pulaski County and Little Rock, Arkansas. an attempt to show balance in this show, we attempted to make contact with Angel Hill Funeral Directors. We contacted them several times and were hung up on. We finally left a message asking the owner of record, Mr. Lonnie Wright Sr., to call me if he wanted to be a part of the show. And I'm sure he's listening tonight. I mean, I'm not crazy. But, you know, if he'd like to say something, now is the time to press one and get on the phone line and say it. And also we reached out to the Texas Funeral Commission. They chose not to make a comment. They said it's an ongoing investigation, so they chose not to make a comment, and we understood that. Okay, now, remember now, Lucretia's mother died on June 19th, better known as Juneteenth here in Texas. Now we're all the way to Friday, June 25th, and this is the night or the day of the wake. Was it the wake that night or was the wake that day?
The wake was that evening.
That evening. Okay, what happens when you go to the wake of your mother, knowing all that has transpired up until this point? What happens at the wake?
Basically, what happens at the wake, I was high because I knew my mother was not in the casket.
Okay.
I don't mind stating that. That's how I got through it. Yeah, because Trini had already informed me that she could not be in the casket during the wake because of the smell, and he had to do everything that he could to prep her nonstop until the funeral, basically putting her in these trash bags and dousing her with whatever type of powder that they use, and then he needed to refreeze her and then once again douse her again with this powder and then refreeze her again. So,
okay. But at the wake that evening, they did not have a body in the casket. In all actuality, the casket was empty.
There was nobody in the casket at the time of my mother's wake. When I got up and spoke,
and I'm laughing, because I know what's coming. I'm not laughing at the story. I know what's coming. That's why I'm laughing, y'all. Trust me. When
I got up and spoke, I let them know that there was nobody in this casket because the funeral home allowed my mother's body to decompose and they fucked up and she's not in here. So basically, that's what it was.
Because I'm trying to explain why I'm laughing, and people probably think I'm crazy because I'm laughing at this point. But, again, Lucretia was high, and she got in the pulpit of her church to tell the people that there was no body in the casket and that, you know, for all practical purposes, the funeral home had effed up. And this was in the pulpit again, right, Lucretia?
Yes.
So
and people that were sitting down was like, oh, my God, she's going to fall. They were worried like I was going to fall. I was leaning. I was whatever. But whatever, you know, I had to get through it. That was my mother. And I had just buried my brother two months before.
Right.
I mean, my brother died April the 26th. I buried my mother June 26th, 2 months to the day. Like, who does that?
So you were, needless to say, you were extremely emotional. You were under a tremendous amount of stress, and you had to stand up in front of your family and your friends and tell them that, for all practical purposes, you know, this was just an empty casket. This was not your mother, you know, and that the casket was not going to be open. They were not going to be able to view the remains. And so I'm sure that was a lot of stress for you at that time. Is that correct?
Yes, it was, and it has been stressed for me ever since.
Wow. So what was the reaction of the people when they realized that there was nobody in the casket and that they were not going to be reviewing, they were not going to be viewing your mother's remains?
I really don't know.
Okay.
I can't even begin to tell you because I really don't remember. I think some people were shocked. They really didn't believe me, but they believed me when it was time for the funeral.
Okay, the funeral was the next day. What happened the morning of the funeral?
The morning of the funeral, everybody got dressed except for me. I laid in the bed until the funeral cars came. Everybody is like, you know, Krisha, you got to get up. I'm like, I don't even want to go. So basically, I just threw on a wig that was twisted sideways. I grabbed the first dress out of the closet that was not even earned. And I walked out the house. No. Going to my mother's funeral.
Wow. So needless to say, you were not at yourself. The stress was beginning to take a toll.
Right. What I will say is the funeral home tried to go above and beyond by having extra cars, extra motorcycle people there, extra, because it was only supposed to be like two helpers as far as the funeral director people. I think in all we had like six. I think everybody that worked for them was basically there. They went, like I say, they tried to go above and beyond. They had the picture. My cousin blew up a picture and had that on the casket. They had a picture of her to where instead of signing a book, you could sign the picture. They had that. And
did
they
did all that make you feel better?
Hell no, because I knew my mama was in that casket in some trash bags doused with powder.
And that's the image
that's in my mind still to this day. I never got to see my mother's body. But when I started trying to pursue and find attorneys because I wanted to sue the hospital, so when I contacted Amy Gregorski and asked her for copies of the autopsy, the first thing she told me was, only allow your attorney to look at these pictures. She said, please do not look at these pictures. I looked at these pictures for 2 years straight, and I still look at these pictures every single day of my mother.
Wow.
Within looking at these pictures, I've been depressed. I've had Bell's palsy. I've had trigeminal neuralgia. I've had a mini stroke. All from stress.
Wow. And the doctors have said this is all stress related.
Yes, my doctor has said it is all stress related because I am not grieving and I am not letting go and I am not dealing with this. And
okay,
I need to leave.
That said, I'm sorry, he said you need to do what?
Stop looking at the pictures, but it's like I can't. It's like it's become addictive.
Didn't the stress of all of this take its toll and you reached out again to the owner of Angel Hill Funeral Home? As I said, the owner of record is Lonnie Wright Sr. And didn't you say, listen, I've just had enough. I'm just tired. I just want to. And what was that?
Yes, my doctor told me to. That was after I had like a mini stroke and a seizure and some more stuff last year. I think it was like February, April. I contacted him. I drove out to his funeral home. He was not there. I called him on his phone. He knew exactly who I was. He was like, hello, Lucretia. And I was like, hi. And I was like, basically, you know, this has caused a lot of pain and a lot of stress in my life. Just the constant thinking and the pictures and, you know, what y'all did to her. And, you know, if you just go ahead and reimburse me my funds and do what you need to do, then I will let everything go, the lawsuit go, everything. This man who is supposed to be a reverend, am I right?
Yes, I think he is a reverend.
Yeah, basically told me to, he wasn't giving me shit.
Ooh.
And I might as well go ahead and have my lawyer to contact his lawyer because he wasn't giving me a motherfucking thing.
Are you quoting him verbatimly?
I'm quoting him verbatimly. And I, by the grace of God, I thank God that he was not there at his office when I was there. Because it would have been a different scene.
Wow. And I thank God he wasn't there as well. I do. Because, you know, yeah, we read the autopsy, and the autopsy is not posted on the page, but the autopsy report basically states that, you know, under the section that's titled Evidence of Decomposition, it states that the body was in early stages of generalized decomposition and that it was evident by diffuse of marbling, skin slippage, loss of rigor mortis, and liver mortis. It was subepidermal fluid. If I'm saying this incorrectly, you correct me, Mr. Jones. Filled with blisters and early intraperitoneal flowing.
Intraperitoneal fluid. All of that rigor mortis.
Okay.
The skin slippage, which is actually desquamation, blisters, and just the term generalized decomposition means that the body in the whole decomposition is spreading throughout the body. The skin slippage was where the skin tissue actually begins to come, remove itself from the body. Marbling is a process where the breaking down of the blood cells and the subcutaneous tissues begin to separate. And there is a pattern that resembles a leopard print that begins to show through the skin. You can see that on the pictures that Lucretia has of her mother, where around the shoulders and the thigh area, where it looks as if the tissue is separating, or it has a pattern that's similar to that pattern that you see when you're looking at a leopard marbling. Blistering is when just that. There are several blisters that occur throughout the body. Purging, which is the escape of body fluids out of any orifice of the body, whether it be the nose, mouth, ears, anus, vagina, fluids begin to escape the body through that because of a buildup of pressure. So all of these things are going on, and all of those things you can clearly see in the pictures.
So it is safe to say that if this body was not embalmed, again, just to reiterate, y'all, if you happen to just attend it, it's safe to say that if this body was not embalmed within 24 hours, it should have been refrigerated.
Yes, yes, it should have been.
It should have been refrigerated.
Even more so. Once the funeral home was notified that there was going to be a private autopsy to be done, and in that event, once the funeral home was notified that there was a private autopsy to be done, then again, the funeral home would have known to place the body in refrigeration. If they do not have refrigeration, then they would have contacted either a third-party contractor in the form of a mortuary service, another funeral home that they may have a professional relationship with that has refrigeration, or they could have even contacted the county medical examiner's office and explained the situation to them. And many times, if the medical examiner's office has room in their morgue, they will allow the funeral home to bring the decedent there and keep it refrigerated. A lot of times the group of pathologists that are performing the private autopsy have their own facilities to refrigerate. So something could have been done.
Well, he knew that I wanted an autopsy done because even when I was there at the hospital with her, I requested an autopsy, but since the tubing was already pulled out of her before I got there, they told me that I would have to pay for it. So he, when I spoke with him Sunday, he knew that I wanted an autopsy done outside pathologist. I did not want anyone from the hospital to do it, and I stated to him that I would pay for it out of pocket. And he said he had no problem with the American Forensics using his facility, but he did charge me $600 for them using his lights.
Okay. You know, Lucretia, let's just, we're down to our last, like, 6 minutes of the show. Do you feel that you let your mother down? Is the stress from all of this more about the fact that you feel like you let your mother down? Is that what this is more about?
Yes. I feel like I've always taken care of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Always. I've always made sure if, you know, somebody said something out of line to her, you know, once she got saved, I was always like the black sheep of the family because, you know, I didn't have the respect, you know, being 14, I would cuss an older person out if it had something to do with my mother. So I always felt like I was the protector of my mother. And I feel like I let her down. I feel like I allowed them to hurt her. They hurt her. Even though everybody keeps telling me that that's only, the body is only a shell.
Mm-hmm.
No, they hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
They hurt her. When I left my mother was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And they hurt her. So she can't speak for herself, so I have to speak for her.
Mm-hmm.
And they hurt her, and I still want them to pay.
Completely.
I don't want this to happen to anyone else. I don't want anyone else to ever have to go through this because it is stressful.
Mm-hmm.
It is stressful. It's been plenty of times where I've set up and thought about, because I've looked at these pictures so much, that I wanted to kill myself.
Oh, no.
But
no, no.
I can't do that because I have two children that I still have to take care of. So
absolutely.
I don't want this to happen to anybody else.
Right. I absolutely understand. Well, you know what? We're down to our final, actually 3 minutes in the show. Is there any closing comments from you, Lucretia, or you, Mr. Jones?
Lucretia, is that all you're going to say right now?
That's all I'm going to say. I'll just
handle
everything in court.
Well, I do want to say something. This is a terrible thing that has happened. And in this day and age, we're hearing so many things about professionals and people who we put our trust in to do to provide us a particular service that we as commoners or people as commoners are ignorant of. Whether it be medical, whether it be funeral service, whether it be the interpretation of the law, whether it be the enforcement of the law, we're dependent on people and we're trusting people to treat us right. I do want to be clear that when you hear stories like this, it's not every funeral professional or not every funeral provider that does this type of thing. We get this type of thing that happens when people are in this business that are not qualified and simply should not be. I've explained before that now in the state of Texas, they have a program where you can go to a mortuary college now for 6 months and be certified as a funeral director and later on get a funeral director's license. And in my own personal opinion, they have people that are utilizing this program and taking advantage of this program, and these individuals simply just should not be in this business. This is how you get things of this sort. This is how you get people and problems or incidents of this sort that happen.
Mm-hmm.
The individual that we're speaking of in the form of Pastor Wright is obviously someone who should not have been in this business. He does not know funeral service. He obviously does not know how to treat people, and he does not know how to treat people who are experiencing grief or the loss of a loved one. And funeral service is unlike any other type of business there is, because we as funeral service professionals have to be a sponge, and we have to absorb that grief. We have to absorb when people are angry with us, when they are grieving the loss of their loved ones, and then we come in front of them and tell them that they are owed a financial liability for the services that we provide. But we also have a line of integrity and trust that family give us when they trust us to take care of their loved ones. And all of these, the series of events that she has experienced completely, it was a malpractice of trust. It was a malpractice of integrity. And I really are hurting from hearing this and seeing those pictures. No one should ever have to experience this. And I really hope that she gets what's coming to her.
Wow. Okay, yeah, that's going to have to be the final word. We'd like to say thank you to Mr. Steve Novacek for being with us tonight. Mr. Jones, not his real name, but we chose to use Mr. Jones because he's in the field of embalming and funeral directing in this area, and we just thought it may be a conflict of interest. Also, we'd like to thank Patricia Steele Thompson for telling us her story. Listen, y'all, we do this each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Come and join us. Tell a friend, tell a family member. Join us Center Stage here every Friday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Okay, y'all, thank you again to my guests for being with me. Thank you to the audience. Thank you to the audience for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Bye-bye. Hey. Are we still on?
We're gone.
Yeah.